Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Frank Benali.
This is Klaus Lundekvam.
I'm Matt Letitia.
Dean Hammond's here.
And you're listening to In That Number.
Here is Letitia in the standing. There's the reply. Barry at the heart. History made.
It's James Beattie. Oh, Belton.
Barry for the hat trick.
Pass lifts it and he's got it in as well! And Danny Ings has done it again!
Thanks for checking out In That Number with me, Kevin the Moscow Mush Middleton, and Ray Hunt. Find me on Twitter at Moscow Mush and my co-host Ray Hunt at RayHunt84. Follow the show at Number Podcast on Twitter, In That Number Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you've got any questions for the show, if you can be bothered, send us an email to inthatnumberpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share, subscribe and give us good vibes. Let's go.
Welcome to another episode of In That Number. Proud to be a part of the Sports Social Network. This is episode 176, and what a fantastic week it has been. It's been an emotional one, but three wins, stark contrast to the previous. We started with the signing of Carlos Alvarez, then the unbelievable victory over Manchester City in the Carabao Cup quarterfinals. But the question still remained, could we pick up those vital 3 points in the relegation scrap against Everton? Yes, we could. James Ward-Prowse to the rescue and banishing a 25-year losing record at Goodison Park. Four amazing goals, which could already grace goal of the month for us. Yes, we remain bottom, but we've given ourselves an almighty chance to get out of this. And do we have this belief now? And do the players have the confidence to extend this against Aston Villa next week? To top off the celebrations this week, Dan and Lundeloo's new team, Bolton, handed the skates a beating too. So lots of smiles today for a change. And with me to share in the celebrations, we have the Moscow Mush, Kevin Milverton, and the returning Tim Bazance, who's going to give us the lowdown on Villa. But first, Kevin. Kevin, what a week. Happy days for the moment. And I'm determined to make the most of it. How are you feeling?
I'm settled. It's a strange feeling, isn't it? It's been a long time coming. Yeah, I don't know. I was almost, you know, more negative than you about the team. And they go and pull off a week like this. So, yeah, never a dull moment as a Saints fan.
It's certainly not. And away from the pitch, how are you on a personal level?
I'm all right. Yeah.
Good. You sound a little bit more chirpy and upbeat than you did last week. I'm guessing that's because of the team.
Yeah, I mean, it's the subject matter, isn't it? yeah, you know, life goes on.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine. Yeah, I've had a good week. It's all clicking into place as well. So yeah, it's been good. I get what you mean about the unsettling feeling. It's just that I don't know, because I'm so negative. I keep thinking that something bad is about to happen. You know, you can't have the all this pleasure, but where's the pain kind of thing. But I'm sure there'll be time for it. But like I said, I'm determined to make the most of it this week.
Yeah, well, we've still got another table. We've got that going for us.
Yeah. See, it balances itself.
You want some negativity.
Yeah. And Tim, welcome back. It's been a while. We were just saying off air that, you know, we haven't spoke since Kev's amusing town names during that USA England World Cup game. But yeah, it's been a busy Christmas and New Year for you. You know, you've returned to Chicago. You're settling into a new job, settling into your new place. And how are the stress levels? Because I mean, at least you have the relief of not having to worry about Saints for a few more days, at least.
Yeah, that was the thing, was everything was so crazy going on. I moved 850 miles, full house. I mean, up through the holidays, had the holidays to try to enjoy. Significant travel issues, and if you don't hear about Southwest Airlines and how they canceled, you know, a ridiculous amount of flights, I was in that mess as well. And all in all, like, I really didn't have a time to enjoy anything else outside of, well, just trying to do my job and trying to move. And so what's been amazing is that ever since I've been able to plant myself in Chicago full time, everything's back and moved in, Saints haven't lost a game yet. So to me, I think that's a good thing.
Absolutely. So just stay where you are. Don't move again. Just stay put.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere. Obviously, that's the idea, and we'll be settling in for the long haul here, which is really nice, and it's good to be back in my home. I'm born and raised in the Chicago area, so haven't been back here in 6 years, and there was a lot going on.
Okay, right. We have to get into some ITN news. So shall we do that now?
Let's do it.
Do it. This is ITN In That Number News.
Okay, ITN News then. Before that fantastic result against City on Wednesday evening, we revealed our latest recruit, Jones' second winter signing, a 20-year-old Argentinian midfielder, Carlos Alcaraz, not the tennis player, from Racing for a fee of $12.3 million plus a 15% on any future sales. Kevin, it's not a striker. It's not a player with experience. It's another youngling with a point to prove. But what are your feelings on this latest signing? And, you know, we got to see him for 30 minutes at Everton yesterday. So, yeah, and thoughts on his bite-size inclusion?
I don't know. I'm not massively excited. I'm not going to pretend to know a lot about the Argentine League and, you know, what role he played at Racing. I don't know. We still do need a striker, don't we? That is a worry. That we've signed... It's at least 10 players we signed now, so it's almost a whole lineup of players, and there's just one omission that we're all waiting for. But yeah, I don't know. He looked all right, didn't he?
Yeah, but I just don't want it to be another one of those Diallo signings, you know, where we get this player in that we don't necessarily need right now, and he comes in and out of the team. He's never going to get a chance to settle, and you know, whenever he does play, it's not enough, and it's not going to be good enough at times. But
like a Gineppo or an Elianusi or any of the players that he's signed to replace.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, it's a signing, isn't it? It's more depth, and it's kind of what we do need, the depth as well. It's other options, especially that we're still fighting in all three competitions. Don't forget that we need a bigger squad, and we've had a big busy week. So yeah, it's a good thing. Tim, something I want to talk to you about quickly was Tino Livramento. He's had another injury setback. He was spotted on crutches at Staplewood, and things were looking good for him because he returned to training and he actually went to Spain for the training camp during the World Cup break. But this is a new setback. But apparently it's a completely different issue to his ACL recovery. It's a minor muscle injury, so it's probably a hamstring or something like that. Nothing to panic about, nothing to worry about, right?
Oh, no, it's 100% panic. We're in 20th place and the world is burning around us. So, but seriously, so the thing about when injuries that like Tino has, it's not very common, but when an injury occurs at a different place, they put him in a brace and on crutches as a precautionary measure. So even with the hamstring, because of the development back in the muscles of all the areas, they still want to isolate and segregate the different recovery points. So by putting him back into the brace and putting him on crutches, it's just a conservative approach trying to handle and manage that you're not going to take on too much of a load on those areas with the using the crutches to help with the weight distribution and the brace to not prevent awkward movements. Because if your hamstring is an issue on the other side, you don't want that injured area to compensate, which then could further potentially, you know, throw yourself off. And so when I saw that, I was scared because you never know. But ultimately, after looking through it all, if it's the other side, if it's a hamstring injury on the other side of the body, I'm less concerned about it. But it just still will hamper the total recovery timeline for him. I was thinking I think I said a long time ago, I was thinking February, and I'm still optimistic for him to get back to it. But realistically, I don't think he's going to have much of an impact at all the rest of this year. I just don't think it's there.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any rush to get him in at the moment anyway, unless we suffer an injury to Jakai Walker-Peters. But at the moment, yeah, there's no rush on it. But yeah, like nothing to worry about. My only concern is that he's picking up a lot of injuries already in his young career, and he could become injury prone. You know, you have an injury when you've been out for something as crazy as this. It's not good, but
yeah,
it happens in football, doesn't it? A lot of hamstring injuries, especially.
We're in the staple point is Sam McQueen, and Sam McQueen's injury, though, because he basically had an infection from the ACL, and the new ACL didn't take. That was the problem, which led to effectively him being forced to retire. But you are correct that someone being younger in his career who can eventually get back to it, I have the faith that he can do it. It's just that his development as a player, though, is extremely hampered. And people are thinking, oh, he might get signed off, or he might, if when we get relegated, he won't go anywhere. He'll be back on the team because he's going to want to have some game time, and knowing that he will likely have a lot of game time with us, because he needs to get back into the swing of things, because he's a complete unknown now with such significant injuries and seriousness with it. Because, I mean, it was, what, March of 2023? So a year is not uncommon for that type of injury to come back. It's just you need to get your legs under you, and you need to get some experience in you.
Yeah, and hopefully he can get back into that team and go straight into the right-back position, because now we've seen Kai Walker-Peters has been playing a role at left-back, so it could be good, it could be good. Moving on then, Kev, Sport Republic CEO Rasmus Ankersen, he's spoken out regarding, you know, the transfer strategy. He did it on BBC Radio Solent in the week. Did you manage to catch up with this interview?
I did, yeah, and I don't know, did you hear the interview with the Havant and Waterlooville manager, St. Paul does well, and he's a Saints fan, and they had him on sort of partly as a Saints fan, partly as a manager, and he was absolutely scathing about Nathan Jones, and it must have even the news must have got to him, because I think he referred to it in one of the press conferences. But yeah, on that, Adam Blackmore revealed that he'd been trying to get an interview with Semmons or Ankersen for over a year. So basically since he started the whole Sport Republic takeover. And then all of a sudden we get this interview with both of them at the same time. I don't think it really revealed much, to be honest. I mean, they addressed all the concerns, but it was, you know, sort of corporate speak that you expect.
Yeah, and I confess I didn't listen to it live. I knew it was coming on, but I didn't bother. Because of that reason, I knew exactly what was going to happen. It's going to be the corporate spiel. It's going to be stuff that we know what they're going to say. But for those of you that didn't, I mean, I want to touch on some finer points of it. Okay, so since the departure of Joe Shields, Rasmus himself has taken the lead on the recruitment process. We are looking to strengthen in central defence and attack. They are the priorities, and they're also looking to bring in cover for Tino, but that is not the priority. They've been working 24/7 to give Nathan Jones the firepower we need to stay in the Premier League. The transfer committee consists of Ankerson, Martin Semmons, Henrik Kraft and Toby Steele. He didn't agree with the majority of the fan base about our strategy of bringing in the youth and argued that Joe Aribo and Duja Cheletadzar are in their mid-20s and established international players. I guess, you know, we can throw Orsic in that mix now as well. So I'll quote him now. We really only lost one starting 11 player with experience, and that was Romelu, who had the desire to leave, and we chose to accept that. Looking back, you'd like to have a player like that around now. But the reason we buy young, talented players is not just because we are all about making some profits. We actually believe that if Southampton is going to get back to the top 10, then we need to take a slightly more long-term view than just only thinking about survival and recruiting ready-made players, which is very expensive and has a lot of risks as well. It's a strategy in line with Southampton, turning potential into excellence, and that is what is reflected in the strategy. Do we always get it right? No. But I think we have some really exciting young talents who can be among the world's best. It's always a balance, and we knew this year would be a little bit of a risk, but if we could get through it, we could be very strong and push on. Kev, I'll come to you first because, you know, you started the segment off. I feel this interview was needed because we already knew what he was going to say, but I still felt it needed to happen. And we needed to feel that because I said last week we need to feel a connection with the board. And we want to hear it from the horse's mouth. We don't want to hear it, you know, from The Athletic or anything. We want to hear it from him, especially as the fans, they've grown tired lately of the policies already. So
I think, yeah, you're right. We seem to have lost that connection with the board that we seem to have before, which is kind of ironic, I suppose, because
we never had it with Gao, did we? And that was the problem. And we wanted a new board to come in and we wanted to feel that connection. We still haven't done it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe my memory's doing me a disservice here, but, you know, as far as I can remember, they would come out with interviews a lot more often, which I thought was, you know, quite encouraging before, you know, when they were making that transition. But now we've got the new board in. Yeah, this seems to be just, you know, no communication there at all. Although, you know, you do get the fans forum and that sort of thing.
But they don't sit on the forum. They just send in the manager and they send in the player and then they send in Toby Steele to do all the work.
I think it's a bit disrespectful for the Nathan Redmond that he says that Ariel Romelu is the only, you know, player we've transferred out this season. I mean, okay, yeah, Jan Valeri you can maybe ignore, but he was a first team player. But yeah, Redmond then Romelu have left them, and I think Romelu is the one that's definitely left a hole that Diallo hasn't really been able to fill. It doesn't come at a particularly good time for the board, although it was literally just after that the win against City, wasn't it?
Yeah, that seems like a perfect timing, doesn't it? When the pressure's off just a little bit. I'll go and do it.
Yeah, you're saying, no. 2-0 against City, yes.
Sign me up for that. Yeah, I'm going to get the good end of it. But Tim, are you left feeling any better? Are you left feeling that he is in line with the fans? Or is it just what he had to say?
I'll judge him by his actions rather than what he has to say. Because right now, look at how many players that we've signed in the offseason, in the summer, and then here two more in January. So to me, I guess I've got that long-term concern of we have an absolute bloated team right now with in terms of the total amount of players and availability. Now, is this throwing a couple players and if it allows us to save from relegation, great, that's perfect. But right now, I mean, looking at it, how many people are we going to see cleared out in the off season if when we would go down? And I'm sorry to keep talking about this because, you know, before when Ralph was just sacked and we thought, you know what, we might be able to skate out of it. Right now, it's a real possibility being in 20th. So looking at the team and who are these signings, are they going to play in the championship or are they going to go on loan next year because we can't afford their wages or they don't want to play in the championship, that sort of thing. So to me, I'm a little scared, but maybe he's thinking that this is the opportunity to reload. And by reload is that it's we're going to have the depth needed for a championship because it's four more games. Well, eight more games. And also then the cup runs as well in a condition in addition to it. So I'm a little hesitant because I don't see how people like Aribo are going to be able to play through. We've got two center backs on loan. We've got, we've got Will Smallbone, Nathan Tella. And then of course, like players in the academy who are out on loan, Donald Simeu, Keel Blotz, Nlundalu, Kegs Chake. Are they going to come in and they're going to fill in? I just see that there's a lot of players, and I think that's going to be hampering what's truly needed rather than the focus of where we need to sign, like where are the gaps that we need to sign. But ultimately, if we don't get relegated, then everything that I just said, you can tell me to screw off, and I would not mind because then we wouldn't be relegated.
Well, so I think we're maybe ignoring the beating, you could quite realistically get promoted. It'd be a hell of a beating.
Yeah, and especially with these players in the beating that are playing so well and probably deserve a little bit of a push-up. So you could throw those into the mix also.
Yeah.
But I mean, Kev, we said last week that the club doesn't really have the ambition, and I felt like the appointment of Nathan Jones was something that they seemed accepting the fact that we are going to get relegated and this is a championship side with a championship manager. But listening to what he had to say, I mean, do you feel confident that they do have a long-term plan and they fully back themselves and believe that Premier League survival is what they truly want?
It might be what they want, but I think, you know, this is a very high-risk strategy that you've gone with taking all of these young academy players and hoping that some of them are going to be able to make their mark in the Premier League.
Orsic, Aribo, Chaletazar, they're not youth players. Is what he's saying.
Yeah, but they're still a distinct minority. Like I said, you know, we've signed about a dozen players and only two or three, we could say, have the experience to have what it takes at this level, undoubtedly. We've seen some good young breakthrough players, Labia and Belicocci. Yeah, they've been and Ndozi as well. They've been kind of standouts. I don't know if they can keep that up for the rest of the season, but you know, when you've got a squad as big as ours, I suppose you don't necessarily need them to be able to. But yeah, I just still think that they should have maybe diversified a bit and signed just a couple less of them.
Sure, I agree.
Youngsters and break the transfer budget for a striker.
I think that's still going to come. I hope it's going to come anyway. But Moy was quoted in the week as well as saying that he feels like the granddad to these players, and he's only 20. Even the players believe it.
We signed him from Young Boys as well, didn't we?
Exactly, yeah. Or was it Basel? I don't know.
It was Basel that we signed Basel, him from.
Yeah. Unlucky. Right, okay, so Carabao Cup then. After our win over City, we've been awarded a semi-final tie with Newcastle United, and it's over two legs. The first of which is at St Mary's on Tuesday, the 24th of January, and the second leg is the following Tuesday on the 31st at St James's Park. Both games will be live on Sky. And Kev, just a side note here, I might be going to St James's for a nice little road trip.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, I've never done St James's before. I've never even been to Newcastle, so I just figured, fuck it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bloody do it.
It's an amazing town, seriously. Yeah, you'll love it.
I know. I'll stay up there for the weekend. It'd be great. And following on from the Palace victory in the FA Cup, we will be at home to Blackpool in the fourth round, and that's on Saturday, the 28th of January. That's the meet in that Newcastle sandwich. So, wow, that's going to be crucial. I know that Blackpool are struggling.
Is that the one that comes from Greggs?
Yeah. Yes. I know that Blackpool are struggling in the Championship at the moment. I think they're in the relegation zone, but they did beat Nottingham Forest in the third round. And that's kind of like, well, hang on a sec. If we can't beat Forest and Blackpool have stuffed them in the cup, what does that mean? I just have a feeling this is going to be another one of those like Coventry games from last year where we had to go to extra time to do it. I don't think that one's going to be quite as easy. And that Newcastle one it doesn't get much tougher, does it? Considering we don't play very well at St James's and all that. It's Yeah, I think both those cup ties are going to be huge and difficult.
Potential banana skins.
Yeah, definitely. Another bit of news that came out from the week. Good bit of news. Gavin Bazunu wins Save of the Month for November and December. I'm not really sure how they can call it a Save of the Month if it was over two. But yeah, his save against Liverpool that gave him the silverware. So yeah, congratulations to Gavin Bazunu. Right, okay. We have the transfer roundabout to jump on, guys. So yeah, hang on. We're gonna jump on.
Strap ourselves in.
Okay then, transfer roundabout. I hate this theme tune, by the way. Nathan Jones, interested in a reunion with Luton right back James Bree. This is just going to be a short term cover for Tino. Okay, so no real problems, no real issues. I don't know what's happening with this, but you know that's the latest bit of news on that front. This Lorient striker, Terran Moffey, the Nigerian, it looks dead. I keep on reading stories that it's on.
Dead.
No, he's not dead. The deal's dead. Jesus. I keep on hearing stories that it's on, then it's off. And then that the story comes up again that they're interested in signing him. And if they don't sign him, this is what's going to happen. So I don't know. But the last I heard, the deal was dead. And if that is indeed the truth, then they're looking at Celtic forward, Dazen Maeder. And I've also heard another Celtic player, Josip Juranovic. Transfer news. Kevin, have you heard any more?
No.
Do you know if that Bree transfer would be a loan or would it be...
Yeah, it would be a loan. It would be a loan deal.
I think that would be fine. I think that's probably a very pragmatic approach. And I think we talked about a full year loan for a right back cover was going to be a good shout. To see that the formation changed and using how things are set up, if you were able to get something like that, I think that's the best thing that we can do right now. If you're able to get Maeder, he's pretty good from Celtic. I've watched a few Celtic games now. Let's see what happens. But once again, bloated squad, and what's going to happen if we do go down, and concerns, and let's get some of our players out on loan that need it. Thierry Small, Juan Larios, Vokins is still with us. I'm not sure if he's still with us.
He's just come back from Woking, so he only returned on the 1st of January, but he's been playing and training with the B team, so I think they'll keep him around there, to be honest.
Yeah, and then maybe even a crazy thing, but
Gavin
think maybe
Bazunu, send him out on loan.
I was going to say Adozie, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In Walcott. Let's just get him on. I mean, if you want a coach and a cheerleader, he's probably the most expensive cheerleader in the Premier League right now.
Yeah, and just going back to James Bree, obviously someone that Nathan Jones trusts, and he has said that he's got Premier League quality. So it would be, if it's a short-term six-month loan, then why not? Just as cover.
I could even see him being signed in the off season too. I've been able to see a few Luton games as well. And Bree is one of those players that gets forward, and it's like a very, very budget bargain Reece James, where he can play that right center back but also play a little bit of wing back too, which is really cool. And definitely would be a good shout for the type of formation that he has played. And would be, as long as we're able to get rid of Bednarik in the offseason, I think he'd be really good alongside maybe if Stevens comes back. We'll just see. We'll just also see if we get relegated.
Yeah.
It's just breaking.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of breaking, yeah. Man City midfielder Kean Breakin. If I was making them up.
See, now you're making this up, yeah? You're not making this up.
No, and another Man City midfielder, Carlos.
Oh, Kevin De Bruyne.
Kevin De Bruyne, yeah, he's apparently a lifelong Saints fan.
Eager to join the South Coast outfit. Yeah, I've heard this. This is good. Sorry, who was the actual player?
Yeah, Carlos Borges. Again, a couple of youngsters from Man City. Who would have thunk it? But have you heard the name Scott McTominay being knocking around?
I have not. I'd take that. Although he's got a few cards in him. I don't trust him on the tackling front. You have him in the same team as Lianco and Chileta Tsar, then we're going to have a red card at some point.
Salisu can get a bit grumpy as well.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Loanees then. Dan and Lindelof, I mentioned him at the top of the show. He's left his spell at Cheltenham and he's ended switching to Bolton Wanderers. Didn't start, but came on in the early goings due to an injury and played just under an hour against them lot up the road. And they won 3-0. So, yeah, but that was good for him. I bet he got booed as well. I didn't see it, but he probably did, didn't he? And Jake Vokins, as I also just mentioned, he's returned from Woking and he was involved in the B team Friday night against Newcastle. And Nico Lawrence is joined Torquay on loan for the remainder of the season. So good luck to him. I've got a couple of birthdays here, guys. I'm going to catch you out on one. Right. Gregors Raziak. How old's Gregors Raziak?
He has to be 40.
You're cheating.
Four.
He is 44. Yes.
No way.
Yeah, 44 on Thursday. That's great. Are you sure you're not cheating?
I'm absolutely sure. I wouldn't even know where to look.
Okay. Well, you just put Gregors Raziak and it will come up.
Okay, you'd hear me typing it away, though, wouldn't you?
Surely, yeah. And tomorrow, actually, a little bit early on this, Monday the 16th, Sir Ricky Lambert's birthday. So I don't want to miss this one. So how old is Sir Ricky?
41.
Tim's going 41.
40.
He's actually 41 tomorrow. So well done.
Wow.
You guys have aced it. Well done, guys.
Well, we're both correct, yeah. He's 40 today.
Yeah, well, he is 40 today. Yeah, well done.
Good teamwork there.
Yeah, I love it.
Teamwork there.
Okay, the B team then, as mentioned, they played Newcastle on Friday the 13th. A brilliant 4-1 victory. Goals from Lewis Payne, Cammy Doyle. Kevin, have a guess who scored the other two.
It's got to be Don Ballard, surely.
Yeah, Don Ballard got one and Jimmy Morgan got the other. So, yes, 8 games undefeated now. Moved to the top of the table in Premier League too. But Leeds have a game in hand. So next match, they've got Everton on Wednesday the 18th. And that's at Staplewood at 12 p.m. kickoff. The women are playing right now against Lewis at St Mary's. So I'll check back in with them in a bit and see how they're getting on. Okay, then. So we have to talk about these two games now. And I'm guessing we're all thrilled to be doing it for a change. And we'll start with the Wednesday game, of course, Man City. Carabao Cup quarter-final at St Mary's. And yes, what a night. Almost unbelievable. In fact, actually, true story, I woke up Thursday morning and thought I dreamt it. Seriously. I still couldn't process it, I guess. It was just like, wow, this is incredible. And you look at City and you look at us and our current situation. There was nothing that made me think that we could do this. But yeah, my goodness, what a performance. And I guess you could say it was a masterclass from Nathan Jones. And, you know, we need to start there, okay? Because, you know, he made 5 changes from the Cup, went over Palace, started with a back four, and Kyle Walker-Peters playing left back. The inclusion of Gineppo down the right and Mara leading the line didn't fill me with too much confidence, but proved to be the correct decision because they were the goal scorers, of course. Whether it's by luck or judgment, I don't really care. But, yeah, Mislav Orsic was named on the bench. Tim, I'll start with you. Great, incredible night. We started the better, didn't we? But we did have a little bit of a scare early on when Gundogan put one just wide.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you know you're going to get those peppering shots. So you just want to have luck go your way because once again, if you go 10-15 minutes into the game and you go down 1-0, the morale just kind of knocks you out. So right there, that was the luck that allowed us to use it as a foundation and settle into what was eventually a proper counter-attack football game.
And Kev, I mean, we did have our chances as well, didn't we? Because Chaletzar had an effort that was saved well from Ortega, a little bit of a snapshot that he had. And Salisu, he headed it straight at him, and Gineppo sent one over. We were threatening, and there was no ideals to sit back and just hold City off. We were the better side, and we deserved the lead, I thought.
Yeah, it was coming as well. I mean, it's just like, you know, chalk and cheese in the space of a few days. I don't really understand what's happened, but I'm definitely enjoying it.
I'm all for it.
Wonderful. I mean, who knew that, the anchor right back, I suppose it's the Brazilian roots coming through, but those crosses that he was putting in were just phenomenal.
Yes. Yeah, they were. And
one just before the goal where Mara on the turn almost stuck it in the back of the net.
Yeah, the moment did come for Murray. That's 17 matches and 5 starts now. His first goal for the club, and one that he won't forget, one that we all won't forget, you know, and it all came from that Lianco cross that you just mentioned. He was brilliant, by the way, and he kind of like intercepted the City break and ran down the left, ran down the right and fired in a low cross to Mara, and he slotted it home. Yeah, what happened to Mara? Because we've not seen him in that, with that composed sort of head about him, and he's just, yeah, great finish.
He looked really good. Yeah, he looked really good. Yeah. So the comfortableness, and he's got that, some people have said, oh, he's got a little bit of swag or doesn't show like he cares. Well, he wants to keep a cool head in the face of what is a serious game, because not every player has the personality like Lianco, who is just an absolute madhouse of a rabid, he's like a rabid dog out there, just completely going after it. And he just seems to be much more of a cool, calm and collected person, and found the space, made the run. And that was Lianco's best game as a Saint.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was, yeah, he was excellent. And he has got that in him, but I still don't trust him. I still have that, he's got those bad performances in him, like we saw against Nottingham Forest. But, I mean, you're always going to get that with defenders, aren't you? They make a mistake, there's a goal.
He's extremely aggressive. So I that's where you're going to get from it. Even in just after the goal, he went for a clearance out on Jack Grealish, and Grealish brought it into the box. And then if it wasn't for I think it was Salisu then who was able to stop it and put it out for a corner. But he would have been at fault. Lianco would have been at fault for that goal if it went through.
Yeah, I mean, stroke of genius putting him up against Grealish. But do you feel more confident with Lianco as a right back than a centre back?
Yes, I do. I do. As long as he's not going forward. Yeah. As long as he's not going forward too much. I mean, I know the goal he had to go forward for.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but I don't know. It depends who he's got playing at that right centre back as well, doesn't it? Someone that's going to have to cover him quite a lot if he does go forward. I don't think he's got the pace to be able to get back, especially against a team like Man City. They've got all those players, especially like with Grealish playing down that side. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't trust him. There's something about him that I don't trust, and I can't get my head around it. It's just, I wouldn't trust him to open a can of sardines that was already open.
He can't open Grealish like a can of sardines.
Don't get me wrong, mate. I love the guy. I think he's great. And I think everybody needs to have a Lianco in their squad just for every occasion. He's great. But I think if I was making my first 11, he would not be included in it. And also, if Bela Kocic was playing, he wouldn't be anywhere near his team. Not right now, I don't think. But
if Livramento was in the team,
exactly. But I mean, the match did get even better. And the goal got better as well, because Gineppo, he's only capable of worldies, isn't he? And he saw Ortega off his line, and another cool finish. And he has that in his locker, we know. But I don't know, we usually see him panic in those sort of situations and take a dive or whatever it is, but not this time. It was a beautiful, beautiful goal, and his first in nearly 2 years. And just not just the goal, but a great performance from him throughout.
Yeah, I'm interested in just a moment of clarity where he's seen the keeper off his line and thought, fuck it.
Why not? Yeah, yeah. Tim, we went 2-0 up, and then we knew that the City's bench, you saw the City bench at the start and thought, fucking hell, that's incredible. If things aren't going well for them, they can turn it around. And I'm just going to read them out just to magnify this. So they got Edison, Ake, Akanji, De Bruyne, Rodri, Bernardo Silva, Riyad Mahrez and Erling Haaland, all on the bench. That is over £360 million worth of talent at Pep's disposal. With a click of his fingers. A click of his fingers, he can change things around in his favour. And he did that. He made three changes. On came Akanji, Ake and De Bruyne. And within 10 minutes of the second half, still no dice. And he throws on the shit Ricky Lambert, Erling Haaland.
The blonde Ricky Lambert.
I'm very happy that they rotated. I do genuinely think this was an afterthought, and I was really happy to see them not care. I mean, in a way that they didn't care. So to me, we got lucky there, but they did not. I would never expect them, even their B team, to play such a poor lineup. That was really bad. And to me, I was not. I was scared, but I was not happy to see any of them come on to the game.
No, but I mean, it just goes to show, doesn't it, Kev, that with all those players, it, again, it just magnifies the performance that we had, because he did bring those players on. Well, not all of them, obviously, but he brought on, you bring on the likes of De Bruyne and Erling Haaland, you know, you've got a match made in heaven for anyone and a nightmare for any defence. But the fact that we stopped them and they didn't even have a shot on target, that is excellent from Saints. I know a lot of people are gonna flip this and say that City weren't at their best. They didn't start with the greatest lineup, but oh, come on, we need a lot of credit for that.
Still a very good lineup. They're all seasoned internationals, Premier League quality. Maybe why do I keep wanting to call him Carton Palmer, Jolyon Palmer, Palmer. What's his name?
Cole
Palmer.
Agreed. He's up and coming, isn't he? Yeah, exactly. But the thing I liked is Jones immediately reacted to that, and he took Gineppo off for Perro. And I know Gineppo had a slight knock, but you know, he brings Perro on, he shores up the defence a little bit more. But just the whole match was just a fantastic effort. And the thing that I noticed, Tim, is they were so good at winning the ball back. And, you know, Lavia was key to that in the time that he had. But yeah, just brilliant at winning the ball back against a team like Man City, even with a midfield like Foden and Cole Palmer.
Yeah, Lavia's got the talent, and he's the best signing so far in the offseason. I know Belakachev is up there, but seeing with what he's been able to do, absolutely fantastic. So to me, I think Jones got it right, because he was able to play what would be the spaces, and he gave them the ball when they needed to be, but they were able to counter press when absolutely available. So all in all, that was it was really the Jones setup that allowed it to happen, because we were clearly less on talent than they have.
Absolutely. And we did get to see Orsic, Kev, for a bit, and it was shade over 7 minutes, I think. Yes, and not enough to judge fairly, but, you know, especially with an influx of City attacks you feel that were coming, you're not going to see a lot of the ball, and Orsic is definitely not going to see a lot of the ball. But, yeah, we got to see him, albeit not a lot. And, yeah, that we hung on, and it was totally deserved as well, wasn't it? Because I think Nathan Jones said at the end that we didn't really have that battering from City that towards the end of the game that you did think was going to be coming, but we didn't get that. So I have to say it was totally deserved. Even Pep had said that at the end of the game, that it was deserved. And we needed it. We needed this win so badly. And, you know, the players, the fans, and probably more importantly, Nathan Jones.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think this would be the match that would decide his fate. But it shut up a lot of the fan base, I suppose us included, who, when of the highest opinion of him, it's maybe made us question ourselves and think, well, maybe he does have what it takes to make this team work.
Eating crow there, Kev. Yeah, I'm always questioning myself, though. So, yeah. But yeah, I just mentioned it, Tim. City didn't register a shot on target. The last time that happened was April 2018. And just let that sink in for a second when you think about the talent that they have. All the goals that they can score, the different ways that they can do it, not one shot on target. So, yeah, an incredible, incredible job from Jones and the team. And it was also the only time that Pep Guardiola has lost a quarterfinal in England. So what do you think of that?
I didn't know what to think. I literally thought my TV was broken. So I just don't. It was baffling to me that happened. And eventually City went on to lose to United this weekend. And I just thought, why are we better than United? Because United, why are we better than the City right now? What can go on? And I don't know. I just didn't know what to think about it.
Yeah. And Kev, have you got any of the stats there?
I mean, obviously we didn't see much of the ball. 28% possession to their 72. Yeah, we had 12 shots against Manchester City. Four of those were on target, and like you said, they had no shots on target. Seven shots in total.
Quiet night for Bazunu against his old club.
Yeah.
Still a few shaky moments though. Still can't deal with those crosses.
Yeah, he's very raw, isn't he? But I suppose that, you know, you just got to stick with him now.
Yeah, if we have to.
You decided not to rest him in the cup.
Yeah, I thought Willie was going to get some action again against his old club, but not to be.
Big Willie action.
Yeah. Tim, I'm going to start with you. Who's your man of the match?
Lianco.
Kevin, who are you going with?
Yeah, Lianco. He gave me a bit of
Wood.
A bit of a Sammy, so yeah.
Okay. I had Lianco or somebody else, and because you two have gone for Lianco, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go Gineppo, and I know he only played 1 hour, but what an hour he had. He had the most shots, he had the most tackles, the most dribbles, and more importantly, he had the most lobs on Ortega, so he gets my man.
Yeah, it's an interesting combination, isn't it? Lianco and Gineppo on the right. You've got kind of the strength and the audacity of Lianco, and Gineppo is sort of...
no strength.
100-mile-an-hour legs, yeah, but yeah. Paper legs, but the speed and the dribbling.
Yes, yeah. And Jones said after the game, I'll quote him again, I thought we were excellent right from the first minute. We were aggressive, well-organised, and went after the game. We scored 2 good goals and had situations where we could have had more. It wasn't a smash and grab. We weren't defending for our life late on, and that shows we've got a lot of facets to our game. I'm pleased for the players especially, but also the staff, because we've been through some stuff. It's been tough, and we show today we have made sane decisions, good decisions, and that's the reward for the last few weeks where we haven't got results, but we have been building performances. Yes, Everton yesterday, Saturday the 14th of January, at Goodison Park. Relief, jubilation, and it just feels special, this one, and the manner of the win. A win that hasn't happened since 1997. I keep going on about it. And again, a Prowsey masterclass. 1-0 down to a Onana goal from a corner. Again, but dragged us to 3 points from the right boot of James Ward-Prowse, showing his different qualities, but vintage qualities all the same. The run, the composed finish, and to the sublime trademark free kick to give us the win and hope moving forward. But... Kev, I mean, the game, it started under a cloud, didn't it? And it's not ours this time, which is nice. Everton protests over the club regime. There was sit-in protests after the game. The board members advised not to travel through safety concerns. And I don't know if you knew this, but the chief executive, Denise Barrett-Baxendale, she was reportedly put in a headlock as she left the director's box in the week. And her car was surrounded and spat on. Chairman Bill Kenwright has received death threats, and just a nasty, nasty place and a situation everyone finds themselves.
This is all just from the stewards.
So, I mean, I wouldn't be attending if I were in that situation either, but I'm all for peaceful protests, like the sit-in ones, fine. I'm okay for that. Everyone has the right to do that, but intimidation is just not on. And
yeah. Stick up a banner or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't help. You know, it's not going to help the players, is it? All the pressure that's on them anyway, and you get this, and it's just, yeah, an ugly backdrop to a crucial fixture for them. But, you know, yeah, this bad, bad times for Everton, and I'm sorry that we're having to pile more pressure on them, but not at our expense.
Really? Are you sorry?
No, just that they're getting all this... like I just said, like, peaceful protest is fine, but the way that they're going about it now, and it's turning nasty and it's turning violent, and you don't want to see that.
No, I mean, it's like, you know, it's Everton are one of those car crash clubs that seems however much money they spend, whichever managers they get in, nothing seems to go right for them. And it's worse than they've ever seen. And they are a huge club, aren't they? Premier League or even a top tier mainstay for so long that it's kind of unthinkable that they're being in relegation positions. But there they are.
Yeah. Tim, we have 3 changes from the midweek win against City. Adams, Adozie and Moyen. I said to you actually before the game that I was a little bit sad that Gineppo didn't make the start after the performance that he gave us against City. But, you know, he did come off after a little bit of a knock in that game. He didn't get any minutes. And new boys, Orsic and Alcaraz were named on the bench. Orsic was unused, but Alcaraz came on for Lavia in the 61st minute. So, Tim, yeah, what did you make of the lineup?
I think it was the right choice. I think that he kept the same formation, but rotated the players out that he felt was necessary. So, to me, looking at it, Adams for Mara seems likely. Moy is obviously a staple of both Ralph and Nathan Jones, and it's probably because he does everything right except score goals, because he just runs around and makes is in the right position and in the right team player. But and then with Gineppo being out, it makes sense to rotate him as well.
Kev, you happy with the lineup?
Yeah, I would say he does run around and make trouble, but we've got a few players that can do that. Adozi and you see a perfectly capable and it's more like a 4-3-3. So yeah. Lianco again cementing his place as our new right back.
Onto the action then. It wasn't as bright a start as the City game, possibly some nerves floating around given the significance of the game, but I don't know. I felt after the opening exchanges this was going to be cagey. It was going to be settled on a costly error akin to that Forest game. And if I'm being honest, I thought the breakthrough would come from Everton.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't massively confident going into this game, even off the back of that City win. It's a horrible place to go. And how long was it before we couldn't defend a corner? Half an hour?
39 minutes, I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah, 39
minutes.
Wow,
okay. Yeah. But it felt like a lot less than that.
It did. But Tim, Everton, they did get the first chance before the goal, and that was Damari Gray, and didn't trouble Baz, thankfully. Still nervy all the same, though, the start. When Everton get these half chances, you still feel, oh, my goodness, here it comes again. We're going to go down. And it almost happens there.
Pressure and shots lead to more confidence, which lead to more pressure and shots, which lead to more confidence, which leads to pressure and shots, and which leads to an eventual goal.
This sounds like a Yoda quote. It was quite nervy. And Kev mentioned, that the corner, whenever a corner comes in, it's always nervy. But we did have a chance, and Moy fired across, come shot. I don't quite know what it was. It deflects off Mikalenko and it goes out for a corner. And Shay Adams is at the back post and he's just leaping up and he just missed him. And, heart in mouth stuff. It seemed to take an age to go out of play. I didn't know what was going on. The opener, it came 5 minutes before half time. And yeah, no surprises. It was a corner. So I've done some work. Of the 34 goals we've conceded in the league this season, how many do you feel we've conceded from corners or set pieces in general?
Set pieces in general? Okay.
Out of the 34, come on, have a guess.
I'm going to go with, let's go with six.
Okay. Tim wins this. It's nine. Okay, I've kind of like... I felt like it was more, but we conceded from corners in the opening two games and, Spurs leads. Also against Villa, against Everton. And then we went for a spell where we didn't. We did get beat 4-0 by City. And City have different ways to be able to beat you other than set pieces. So all of those weren't set pieces. Liverpool, Fulham and, of course, Everton we conceded from corners. But I don't know. I thought it would be a lot more than that. Maybe this was all carrying over from last season as well. But, we...
Bit of recency bias.
Possibly, yeah. But with the with Ralph's set pieces, I've always had a problem and an issue with zonal over man marking. Nathan Jones seems to be doing a little bit of both. Okay, fair enough. Amadou Onana with the header. Elianusi, I guess, losing his marker there. And it's not easy, is it, marking a big man like that? But I just don't think he was great there, Elianusi.
No, he should have got to.
Yeah, I think so, but I might just be being a little bit overcritical. We did get a chance to bring us back almost instantly, and Prowse had this shot, and it was pushed brilliantly onto the post by Pickford. That could have been crucial right there, the timing of that.
I was convinced that was going in.
Pickford's a good keeper, I know he gets a lot of criticism, but he's a very good keeper. He's a very, very good shot stopper.
How are they bottom of the league?
Because the team's not very good. I mean, you look at Bazunu, put it this way. Look at the save percentage of Bazunu. It's the worst in the league. And you look at Everton's or Pickford's save percentage. It's one of the best. So he gets a lot of shots and he saves them. Bazunu gets a lot of shots and he doesn't. So, yeah, that doesn't lie. The save percentage is always a good thing to go by. He's a decent keeper. And I think if they did have a more solid defence, which seems crazy, right? Because they've got Tarkowski and they've got Connor Cody. They've got a decent defence. They're better than us, but not playing like it. But we did get back into the game and crucial time, right? And I think if we hadn't have found that equaliser when we did, then Jones may have pulled the pin a little bit and the setup would have changed. Orsic may have come on and, we could have seen more, a bit of desperation perhaps. But right after the restart, we level it up. And Yeah, a great goal. This goal, right, it was amazing. And I think the second goal kind of overshadows it, but give it the credit it deserves. It was built from the back. Walker Peters lofts one up and Che Adams with a lovely little knockdown. And yeah, first touched right into the path on rushing Prowsey, and then one touch to measure it, two to make Ben Godfrey look like Jan Bednarik. Falls on his ass, and then Prowsey makes Pickford look like Angus Gunn. So yeah, fabulous feat, composure. And as I say, what a time to make it happen. 1-1 with 45 minutes still to play. Game on.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of months ago, you wouldn't have seen Prowsey have the confidence to pull a shot like that. But yeah, the man's back.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Okay, I'm sorry to Angus Gunn there. It wasn't really his fault. But yeah, Tim, what a goal, though. The first goal.
Yeah, absolutely. They found Adams in the space. I didn't realize he could be that target man, but he obviously is always looking around to wherever the next player was, and Prowse obviously makes a run, which is great. And I didn't think he had that first touch in him. That was the key to it. Mm. It was once he was able to bring it down, he was going to cross it over, thinking that was a Guehi, was the one who slid across.
Godfrey.
And yeah, Godfrey slid. Okay, so it was Godfrey, and I can't believe he was able to make the touch, and then it was just a soft touch, and then at that point in time, Pickford is, you know, covering 10% of what is his shot area that he can make, and put it right past him. And wow, just I just didn't think Prowse had that type of that small game in him.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. 50th goal for the club as well. So yeah, that was good. Kevin, then Calvert-Lewin hits the bar, and there you're thinking, oh my god, this game, you know. I guess is it just a case of who wants it more now, because they were still going for Everton?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of chances in that game that I've been shitting myself, and Iwobi had a decent chance as well. But it just sort of fizzled out for them towards the end, so I didn't see any way for them to get back into
that. Really? Because I thought that Godfrey, when he reached for that cross and it just missed out on that, I thought it was coming. And at that point, right, I was praying for 1-1. I thought we have to hang on to this point, because I was worried we'd see another Fulham. And, you know, we deserve a point out of this, and we get nothing. And can you imagine getting nothing in this game? We won the game and we're still behind them. We're still bottom of the league. But to allow Everton 3 points on us now cannot happen. We cannot lose this game. And I thought it was coming. OK, before we get into it, let's discuss Che Adams, his role in this, because Everton are attacking down the right, our left. Adams is in a left-back position, and he wins the ball back from Gray, and then he's gone. He starts the counter, he sets off Kyle Walker-Peters, and then he races onto the loose ball, which leads to Anthony Gordon shoving him, and he gets the free kick out of it. So that whole phase of play was excellent from Che, and it's things like that that I don't think he gets enough credit for. Him and Adam Armstrong, because they're both similar in that regards, and I don't know there's many forwards that do that for their teams. Okay, we still need that number 9, don't we, to stay put and to be that poacher and allow Che and his merry men to, you know, go off and do that, bring the energy and stuff. But anyway, back to the goal. What a moment. And yeah, take it away, Kevin.
It's just a superb free kick. I'm just elated. I'm in shock, first of all. I was almost as shocked as Jordan Pickford was. just incredible. We had to wait so long last year for Prowse to score a free kick, and now he's just knocking him in for fun.
Yeah, he's right on the tail of Beckham again, isn't he? Still.
Yeah, what is that? How far is he in the table?
Two behind now, I believe. He's on 16, isn't he? And Beckham's 18, I believe. I could be wrong. He could be 17 now, but I thought that was 16. But yeah,
two do that for the end of the season.
Well, he needs to, because Saints ain't going to be in the Premier League, are they? So, okay, yeah. So I'm sat there, Tim, right, and I've got my cat snuggled on my lap, and you can imagine what happened next. I screamed the place down. I jumped on my feet. My boy came running down the stairs to check that I was all right, because I mean, I scared the girls. Yeah, I was just screaming. I was punching things. It was amazing. And that's the best moment of the season right there for me. It was incredible. Because it was one of those moments where you kind of, whenever you say, oh, here comes the goal, it never happens. But this time it did. I said, it's coming. It's going to happen. He's got a free kick. It's happening. We're going to win this game. And it did. And that never happens. And I was absolutely over the moon. Tim, please share your experience of this goal.
Well, my experience was my wife yelling at me, telling me, remember, you're in a condo building now, and your neighbors next door, they don't know yet what you're doing at this moment. So stop that. And I said, it was a WordPress free kick. I don't care. And then the look of death was back to me.
Oh, I know that look. I've seen that look that she gives.
Yeah. Yes, it's pretty evil, but I hope she doesn't listen to this. And so the one thing I do want to talk about, though, and I don't think anywhere else I've seen on this coverage, if you watch the Everton game earlier this year, they did the exact same technique with having Milenko drop back, except it was Seamus Coleman, and Coleman was able to clear it off the line. I think that Pickford was so far to the right, and we're thinking that Milenko was going to be able to drop back and cover that edge, thinking that just was going to happen. He didn't get back fast enough, whereas earlier in the year, they did the exact same technique, but Coleman was able to get back and clear it off the edge.
Nobody's getting back to clear that one.
Yes, based on the way that it was, because what ended up happening last year, earlier this year, was they were farther out, so there was more time that allowed for it to happen. Whereas right now they were so short, and they basically would have played them onside, played everybody else who was there onside, and which is why I think that Pickford is literally standing flat-footed there, and he's like, "Oh, Milenko was supposed to drop back, and it didn't work, and that's why I just went in so easily." But who cares?
Yeah,
amazing! Another James Ward-Prowse free kick, best in the world at it currently. Nobody else is better than him. It is amazing to think that Southampton has somebody who is absolute the best in the world at it, something that anywhere else that isn't shit. That's something positive. So to me, I want to say it's going to be really weird going to St. Mary's in 20 years, and you're going to see a statue of James Ward-Prowse, and it's going to be him in a golf swing, and you're going to be like, why the fuck am I going to a soccer game? And there's a player in a statue in a golf swing outside. I'm like, it's a different sport.
There's a statue of Michael Jackson outside Craven Cottage. So,
yes. Well, that, I think it's going to be even more weird than that, because you're just going to see him and he's got a golf swing and he's got like he's looking up to see how far his drive went. And you're going to be like, why? Like, what the hell? Like, what is going on here in 20 years? And you're going to be like, oh yeah, that was a celebration. And you can tell the story to your kids or your grandkids at that point about what's going on. Because that man is going, he is bound for a statue. He is bound to be the best player in Southampton history. And I hope he doesn't ever leave.
I think he might if they go down, but yeah.
Yeah. Weirder than having a statue of Michael Jackson.
Yes. I just want to say on this match as well that the fans played their part at Goodison. They were magnificent. You can't say that we only sing when we're winning, because when it was 0-0, they could be heard. And, you know, when Gray missed that first chance and when the Saints rang out. So to all those fans that made the long trip to Liverpool, you were amazing as always. And, you know, probably carried us a little further than we probably could have. But yeah, a win, another one, massive. And I think bigger than both those cup games put together. So yeah, incredible. And a stat for you, our first win when losing at half time away from home for 21 years. That's quite some stat.
Fucking hell. And that's our first win at Goodison for 26 years.
25, I think. Yeah, 25 years. It was November 97 was the last time we did it. But yeah. And also, first win for Nathan Jones. Yes. It seems amazing, Kev, that just last week we were asking the question of who's going to be the new manager. We were seeking out alternatives, and now we're asking the question, were we just a little bit too hasty?
I'm still reserving judgment.
Yeah.
I think he's got a long way to go before he'll get the fans on side.
Yeah, and so it should be, I think. You don't want to get carried away with it. Tim, I want to focus on James Ward-Prowse just for a minute because, you know, let's be honest, it hasn't been the greatest season for him. Romeo leaving hasn't helped. Kev mentioned there's a hole there. Diallo's been in and out through his Saints career. Lavi has been in and out through injury. But recently he's picked it up, and yesterday it was back to his usual self. It's that old adage, isn't it? Form is temporary, class is permanent. It seems to be correct here. You may have noticed, though, that Jones has given him the license to roam a tad more. He's played Lavia and Diallo here to be the defensive anchors, and almost played Prowsey as a number 10, and it's worked because he seems much more influential going forward. And it's not just the set pieces, because we see those lung busting runs rather than the sitting. And you have to credit Jones for realizing that we can get the best out of him there, and B, actually playing two holding midfielders and giving him that role, a role that Ralph rarely did use him in. But I mean, you could argue that Ralph always got the best out of him wherever he put him. But is this something we have to continue to do for Prowsey moving forward, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, he is the captain for a reason. And it's not to say that, oh, the captain is completely immune to being able to be dropped. But his class is there, and he has the ability to be malleable and be flexible when it comes to certain positions. And to me, I'm very happy with that, seeing how he's been able to sometimes play as a 10, like recently, be that six, the holding midfielder. We've seen him at right wing back before, which hasn't been his specialty, maybe was position, hopefully allowing Gareth Southgate to pick him on a team, which it didn't end up happening. But to me, I mean, you're looking at, let's take a look at how many goals that he's had, or, because there was a significant portion of time there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games where he didn't have any goals or assists. And seeing that was definitely the drop. I could see a drop off. But right now, overall, all season, you're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 goals all season. And 6 of them are in the league right now. It's 5 in the league and mm-hmm. 5 in the league, 1 in the Carabao Cup, and 1 in the FA Cup. And then you've got 1, 2 more assists on top of that. He's getting hot when he needs to be, and we absolutely need him. And I think he is the guy who's going to have to carry us to get us to safety.
Someone at work actually said to me, because we'd won 2 in a row, they said, what's the difference? Like, what's happened? What's Nathan Jones? You know, he's a casual fan, doesn't watch it all the time, but he just said, what's changed in those two, from last week to this week? What's the difference? The only thing I could say to him was the fact that Ward-Prowse is the difference. Moving him forward just that little bit more, giving him some cover behind him with Diallo and Lavia, that's the only thing I can think of has changed, because everybody else has been in and out, but he hasn't. And would it be fair to say that he's definitely a lot better going forward than he is defending?
Yeah, he's just not particularly creative when you have him in that holding role. Moving him a bit more forward it seems to have given him a bit more confidence. I don't think anyone is so self-assured in the box as Prowsey has been. I just hope it's contagious that Adams and Armstrong and the like, that they can link up together and finally start scoring some goals, because the stats are pretty damning on that front, aren't they?
Yes, and speaking of stats, what were they like in this match?
We saw a lot more possession, 48%. We had 13 shots to their 12, and 5 shots on target.
5 out of the 13. And what about Everton?
4.
4. Okay, so we beat them on every front apart from possession. Did you get the XG? Because I thought this was quite interesting.
No. Did you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Saints 1.2. What's Everton's?
1?
No.
I'm going to go with like close to 2, like maybe 1.8, 1.9.
It was 1.4, so still 2 above us, which seems crazy. But yeah, there we go. Man of the match, Kevin.
I don't think that there can be anyone else getting the man of the match than Prowsey. We sang his praises so much. I mean, he was just another class, another level, another planet. Planet Prowsey.
Planet Prowsey. I'm coming on board Planet Prowsey as well, because who else? Tim, Are you going to make it a hat trick?
I don't think the man is going to leave, even if we do get relegated. I think they're going to sell off a lot more talent. I think they're going to be able, they'd sell off Bela Kotchap or even Salisu or a couple of the center backs, a couple of, you know, maybe Lavia, maybe even Walker Peters, but they won't sell. I think Ward-Prowse will stick with us. And I think he is the man. I think he is the legend as well. He is not I don't think he's a legend. He is the legend.
You think he's overtaken the legend of Matt Letizier now?
Yes. He will by the end of the season. I think Matt Letiz will, and eventually by the end of his career, Ward-Prowse will be over Matt Letiz.
I mean, I think we can have, if there's a conversation that Lambert, Letiz, and some of the other greats are going to be in. You can't not include Prowse in that. Hang on, Ray, you know this better than me. What are the boxes at St. Mary's? Who are they named after?
Boxes aren't named after anyone, but the suites are named after people.
The suites, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got the Mick Shannon suite, you got the Terry Payne suite, you got the Matt Letizier suite, you had the Ted Bates lounge, but that's all changed since when I was there.
Payne, Shannon, Letiz,
Prowse,
Lambert, and Prowse, yeah. Mm. I reckon that's a conversation, isn't it?
The Ward-Prowse suite, yeah. Right, post-match interview then from Nathan Jones in this one. We deserved it today. I thought we were tactically excellent. We weren't really physical, so we had to change and go to a back five to curtail the pressure, and we went back out there to take the game. We had to keep real pace and aggression and make tactical subs late on. Diallo got booked, so we had to shore things up. With the greatest respect, there we go, Kev. They went Land of the Giants at the end, so we just had to see it through. I don't think there's a question over spirit of the squad with what we've been through. From where we were after the Forest game to go bang, bang, bang in three games, it shows the character in the staff and the players is here. We are in a categorically different position to a week ago, but it's only a small step and we have to build on that. We've got some exciting games coming up. Aston Villa at home, which is a tough, tough game. And then back into cup action with three games in just over a week, in which the magnitude is massive. Kev, you've touched on it before. Has Nathan Jones won you over?
No, not yet. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I was still on that Ralph Express even before he signed. So, with me personally, he's definitely up against it. But, I wish him every success. Hope that he can get Saints to succeed because, we're going to need a lot to keep us in the league. But, I hope he can win me over. But, it's a bit early for me.
So he's won three games in a row, albeit only one in the league, but three Premier League teams. So to me, that's what you need. He needs that. And to me, I can't believe that we beat Man City and then had two more, just had three in a row. The jury's still out, and I won't be on the Jones track until we're sitting in 14th or 15th place and looking down against a couple teams that are going to get relegated. Hopefully, looking at Bournemouth, Everton, and for the memes, and somebody else.
West Ham struggling.
Wolves
struggling.
Yeah, West Ham. Wolves won yesterday, and they got Lopetegui. So, to me, it's going to be a fight.
Also, Lopetegui just signed. Mario Lemina gone.
Mario Lemina,
he's just gone to Wolves. So, welcome back to the Premier League. Something that I missed in my news. The big games that we've got coming up that are winnable. I mean, I don't care what you say. The way that we're playing at the moment, we can beat Aston Villa. We have to go and beat Aston Villa. Ignore the cup games, but then you've got massive, massive games against Brentford, Wolves. Chelsea aren't great at the moment, so they're there for the taking. You've got Leeds, you've got Leicester. There's some West Ham still coming up. There are some winnable games there. We can do this. And we've still got...
We've already beaten Chelsea, haven't we?
Yeah, and we've got Bournemouth to play at home still, don't forget. So there's some games that we can win here, but it all starts with Aston Villa. We have to build on this win. We can't go and do another Forest. And just, shy away and then let them take it to us from an error. And so that Aston Villa game then is next Saturday, the 21st at 3 p.m. kickoff, and that's at St. Mary's. Biggest wins against Aston Villa then. We had a 6-2 in 1967. We had a 5-0 back in 87. We've had 4-1s in 94 and 2012. But the one that everyone should remember is that 6-1 from 2015. With that record-breaking hat-trick from Sadio Mane inside 16 minutes. Let's have more of that again, please. That would be nice. Villa, though, Tim, lately, they're not doing too bad, are they? They're picking it up a bit. The last five, they've had a win, loss, win, draw, and a win. So that's not too shabby. They won at Brighton. They lost at home to Liverpool. They went to Spurs and won. A 1-1 draw with Wolves and a 2-1 win on Friday night against Leeds. That's not bad. That's not bad, especially away from home, which doesn't bode so well. But yeah, winning at Spurs on New Year's Day and at Brighton just before Christmas is massive. Danny Ings is our top scorer with 7, and Ollie Watkins leads their assists on 4. Head-to-head, pretty close. Saints have won 29, Villa have won 31 with 23 draws. Tim, take it away. Aston Villa then. Big game again.
Yeah, absolutely. And so looking at it, Friday now, they won 2-1 against Leeds. So from them, that just builds a lot of good momentum for it. But they did just lose Ollie Watkins and Luca Dean. They went off with injuries in the first half against them.
Which means that Ings is definitely starting then.
Likely. He will very much likely start. And so those add to the injuries that they currently have. John McGinn is currently out. Lewis Augustuston, who is a left back they signed on loan from Sevilla, is currently out. And then Diogo Carlos, who center back they signed in the offseason and tore his Achilles. So he's been out. Earlier this year, we lost to him 1-0, allowing Stevie G to keep his job a little bit longer, thanks to a Ramsey win in the goal in the 41st minute, which led to a 1-0 win. Doing that, they just signed Alex Moreno from Real Betis, who's a 29-year-old left back who slotted in and was one of their best players for Luca Dean. So while Luca Dean is out, they will definitely have their immediate replacement there. And obviously, we just mentioned Ings as well. So one of the curious things that I was looking at with Unai Emery, his history with Sevilla and Arsenal and even PSG, I wanted to look up and see what he did in terms of his formations. And so it's malleable. And you'll see him primarily line up in a 4-4-2, but it definitely doesn't show as a 4-4-2. So what you generally see is an inverted wingers with one of the center forwards tending to drop deep and drag defenders around. So Ings can do that. He has he's got that experience being able to handle it under Ralph, and then with Liverpool as well, being the nine, but also being the distraction up there. So with the inverted wingers, you know, who are you going to see? What's going to happen? We didn't see Coutinho start against Leeds, but I could see them slotting him back in as well. And who knows? They've got a great team. They've got a lot of good pieces on their roster, but it's scary thinking about it. So I wanted to come up with a five-a-side, and looking at the team, I wanted a five-a-side with all South Americans, because I think that five-a-side players, if they're South American, so you've got Emi Martinez, you've got Lianco, you got Alcaraz, Philip Coutinho, and Emiliano Buendia. So that would be a super scary five-a-side team, especially with Lianco in front of Martinez. And then you've got Alcaraz, Coutinho, and Buendia just dancing around everybody. That team would destroy a lot of people. That would be really, really scary. So what are we looking like for their formation coming up? Their lineup just recently was Martinez, Young, Consa, Mings, Dean, Bailey, Luis, Kamara, Ramsey, Buendia, and Watkins. Immediately, you can slot in Mourinho and Ings in there for Dean and Watkins, respectively. But like I said, Coutinho, where does he slot in? What's going to happen? Maybe you see him come in for Ramsey. Maybe you see that with more of an attacking lineup there, with like more of a 4-3-3 bull with Buendia and Coutinho playing those inverted wingers. And I'm going to go with that because I think that is the best lineup that they have. And even Ashley Young there kicking it and right back and having a good time starting over Matty Cash, which hasn't been 100% ever since coming back from the World Cup. So power subs that you're going to see, Jacob Ramsey, Morgan Sanson, and Don Docker comes back from suspension for the cumulative yellow card suspension. They've got a few people out on injuries and some loans, and so I don't necessarily think they have that top end heavy bench, but those are going to be your power subs that are going to come through. What's your key battle? It's going to be Che Adams versus Tyrone Mings, beast on beast, just hard nose, hard hitting players. And so when you mention the term battle, it's literally a battle between those two. So it's going to be super tough. If you had Adam Armstrong up there, Sekou Mara, they're going to get knocked around, and it's not going to happen. Adams absolutely is one of the first people on the team sheet that I have. So what are we looking like? Our formation, how are things going to change up? I think it's going to be, we're going to see that three center backs. So we've got Bazunu, Lianco, DCC, Salisu, and KWP. So you're going to see KWP on the left side, and he'll go forward, be the primary wing back, fullback going forward, with Lianco sliding in more to the three at the back and keeping a little bit more of a tighter defensive touch. I think you're going to see Lavia once again gets a start. I think you're going to see Alcaraz come in for Diallo and JWP as well. And then I do think also you're going to see Adozie getting dropped. And alongside that, you're going to see Orsic, Moy, and Adams going up. I think that they are ready to go. I think Alcaraz made enough of an impact in that eight position there, that if you're looking more of a Diallo who's going to sit back and be a little bit better defense and or his positioning, whereas Alcaraz is going to be able to make the push go forward, I could see Diallo also being there, but this is also my preferred lineup too, so I'll rather take Alcaraz at this point.
I agree with your lineup pretty much, but I would say that Diallo keeps his place and Alcaraz will come off the bench. I think he'll be a little bit more defensive minded to start things and then see how it goes, and then there's a possibility that he'll make that change, same one again, out Alcaraz. That's the only other.
Absolutely.
But I don't disagree with Adozie having to sit for a bit and then starting Orsic. I don't see why not. Go for it there and then hold back with Diallo.
Yeah, I could, as long as the rest of January shapes up to be, I don't know why I feel like Adozie needs a loan. Because based on our players, but who knows, we could get three injuries and Adozie's going to be the first person, one of the first people on the team sheet after he scores two against Blackpool and two against Newcastle in the home match.
Formation wise, do you think we'll be going with a 4-3-3 then?
I think it's going to appear as a 3-4-1-2. Or a 3-1-4-2. I can't really pinpoint where he slots in as, like, what is the typical formation. We knew with Ralph it's a 4-2-2-2, and you knew where everybody is going to approximately be. For this, there's too much malleability, and with the players in defense is going to be different than going forward. I think that in defense, you're going to see it as four heavy at the back, with one sitting with Lavia sitting right in front of the two center backs. And then from there, you've got, if it's Diallo, who's going to be a lot closer to the back line, or Alcaraz, who's going to be up pushing a little bit more, JWP in front of there. And then Moy can be anywhere. Orsic could be anywhere. Adams is obviously going to be up top and running around. I've seen it look like a 3-4-1-2. I've seen it look like a 3-1-4-2. I've seen it look like a 4-1-2-1-2. Like, I can't really pinpoint it.
Yeah, it's changeable. It's you don't know. Maybe that's a good thing. It keeps the opposition on their toes. Predictions then. I think I'm first. Yes, I am. I'm going to go 6-1 with a 14-minute hat trick from Che Adams. There we go. I'm going to go for a 1-1, which won't necessarily be the worst result, but I'm going to go a little bit conservative and say 1-1.
Yeah, I think this is becoming like a regular fixture, really, isn't it? We both predict a 1-1 draw. I think we've done it for the last four or five matches. So I'm just going to repeat.
Hold on. I went for a 4. True. I went for a 4-0 City win. So
yeah, we all went for a City win. But yeah, that aside, I think it's been 1-1 draws since October. I think, isn't it?
Possibly. Yeah, so you're going to go 1-1?
Yeah, the draw's got to come at some point.
Okay. Tim, over to you.
2-1 loss.
Discord, then. Alex Haas, Colt Baker, not very slim Jim, and Russ Sayers all going for 2-1 wins against Everton. Well done to them. Colt Baker remains at the summit, some 5 points ahead of Alex. Super 6, round 30 was won by Adrian Gelder with 9 points. Round 31 is ongoing still. Currently, Paul Beasley and Jeff Stelling are in the lead on 9, but we're still awaiting the North London Derby result. At the top of the table was Stuart White with 275 points. Kevin, fantasy football.
I've been doing quite well, despite, I think, me and Tim both triple captained Haaland, taking this opportunity. Did you do the same?
I didn't, because I'd already triple captained at the start of the season on a Haaland one.
Okay, another one after the World Cup.
Can't remember when I did it, but yeah, I've already done it. I did I did play my wild card this week, being a double game week, so I had to make some changes. So I did that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some injury problems here. But yeah, my team's done terrifically well, despite Haaland not netting against United. I'm 53 points this week, thanks to Prowsey for 15 of them. I should have captained you. Yeah, I believe I'm still top of the Podders League. Yeah, I'm actually chalking up quite a bit of a gap here to second. So, yeah. I'm probably going to need that later on the season. And I'm racing up our big league 12th. How far is that? 28 points behind Lucy Heiner. She's having a bit of a shitter at the moment. What about you, Tim and Raymond?
I've been really good, well above the average by 10 to 15 points in the last three games, or the last three match weeks. Right now I'm sitting on 37 points. So... we'll see what happens with that. And it could go up or down. I've got Rashford, triple cap in Holland. Kane's got 2 game weeks. And so the City players have 2 game weeks. The United players, since I got Shaw in there as well. And Trippier is holding a zero goals right now. So he might get the bonus there for the clean sheet.
Yep, top three. Marlon Aiding Allen. Johnny Phillips and Chris Hunch. There you go.
Superb. Do you want a Where Am I this week?
Go on then.
Right, okay. Okay, as usual, you get a free guess on the first clue, but just the one guess. Clue number one, then, for 5 points. This stadium is located 236 miles from St. Mary's.
I'm going to go with whatever the tractor stadium is in Ipswich Town.
Portman Road.
Portman Road. I'll go with that.
Okay, Kevin.
It's one of those terrible distances, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's go Midlands Club. Are you at the County Ground?
I am not at the County Ground, nor am I at Portman Road. So you're both still in, but no points. Okay, so now it starts. Clue two, for 4 points, approximately 33 miles from Old Trafford.
33 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds familiar. Portsmouth at a distance of
the. You going to have a guess for 4 points, Kev? Or do you want the third? The next
nah, one? I'm going to need a third, but not fourth, probably.
Okay, right. Clue three for 3 points, then. This city is noted for its culture, architecture, and transport links. For 3 points, does anyone want to have a guess?
Culture is definitely not Liverpool, then.
No, thanks.
No, okay. Tim's playing it safe. Kevin, are you going to play it safe or are you going to take the 3 points? This city is noted for its culture, architecture and transport links.
So vague. go on then. No, I'm not going to do it.
Okay, so clue four. For 2 points, currently competing in the Premier League and is the 7th largest stadium in the country.
It's got to be Leeds United, isn't it?
You're going for Leeds?
Yeah.
Tim, are you going to go against him?
It's got to be, 33 miles. Liverpool's west, and it's not much of a transport. Leeds is probably better. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Leeds as well.
You are both out. It is not Leeds.
Ah.
No points for both of you. The fifth clue.
Transport famously shocking in Leeds.
The fifth clue. Have a city rivalry with Everton and a capacity of over 53,000.
I talked myself out of it.
Yeah, you both did. So, I mean, you said it's very vague about the city noted for its culture. Well, it actually won the award a couple of years ago, Kevin. So you can't say that it hasn't. Transport links also. And the architecture. Have you not heard of the Liver building?
It's one building.
It's a massive city. I thought, yeah. Do you know, the only reason I included Anfield in this one, because A, I thought it was going to throw you because it's got a city rivalry, obviously. I thought you were going to go with Goodison because, you know, they're very, very, very close, of course. And second, because I asked Caitlin to name a football team and she said Liverpool, which disgusted me a little bit. But I thought, okay, I'm going to go with it.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's the first time you've chosen a Premier League team as well.
Exactly. I threw one in there for you. But yeah, no points for both of you. You couple of losers.
How far was it? 250 miles.
236 miles from St Mary's. So I would have thought it would have been a little bit more. Yeah, but apparently not. And 33 miles from Old Trafford. You kind of went the other way, didn't you? Which the clubs are so congested in that area as well, which is
also, Lancashire's just a hotbed of football.
Lancashire, Merseyside, and stuff. Yeah, but
there's only three teams that play Merseyside, aren't there?
But still, never mind. We'll go again next week. And next week, then, we will go through another crucial game and look to build on this week as we host Aston Villa. We will also preview the first leg against Newcastle in the Carabao Cup semi-finals and the fourth round FA Cup visit of Blackpool. So until next week, up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up Southampton.
Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.